Hello and welcome to episode 27 of Tabletop Game Talk, a show where we talk about tabletop games of all types. I'm one of your hosts, Josh.
I'm Chris.
And I'm Kitty.
Today we'll be talking about solo games. We didn't want to leave out those of us who don't have a significant other. So today we'll talk about games you can play solo. But first we'll go off topic, starting with some news, announcements, and feedback.
Thanks, Josh. First, if you're new to the show, welcome. And if you've been here before, welcome back. And thank you to our Patreon friends of the show, Emil Jiljam, and our newest friend of the show, Lucas Hartso.
Woo!
Thank you, Lucas.
Thank you so much.
And our newest patron, Samir Biswas. This was a good week for us.
Amazing.
Thank you so much.
If you're interested in supporting us via Patreon, you can visit our Patreon page. That's at tabletopgametalk.com/Patreon, or just go to the main page and you can click the Patreon button in the upper right. The biggest advantage to being a patron is you get free entries into all of our contests. We are starting one this week, so if you're a patron, you are already entered. Quick plug before we get to the contest information. Dungeon Alliance. We interviewed Andrew Parks 2 weeks ago on Dungeon Alliance. There are 10 days left. He's a little shy, maybe 20% left of his goal. I have confidence that he'll make it. This game looks pretty cool. Take a look at it and back him if this is something that you might be into. There's miniatures, there's boards, there's dungeon crawly fun and goodness. All right. We were busy this week.
Very busy.
Yeah, Josh and I did an unboxing.
We did.
So we did Assault of the Giants, also another Andrew Parks game.
It looks cool.
Yep. So that was fun and cool. That was our first official unboxing.
And it's on YouTube, our YouTube channel.
On YouTube channel, yes. So go to YouTube and, well, Tabletop Game Talk, the channel isn't super popular yet because there's only like four channels out there. I'll put a link to it on our webpage, though, so you can get to it. But you can also just search for Tabletop Game Talk unboxing. It'll pop up. The other one we did within 24 hours is Kitty and I did Gloomhaven.
For the second time.
Watch the video. You'll hear all the story of how I accidentally got two copies. So I accidentally have two copies. What does that mean? It means I'm going to give away a copy.
Giving one away,
Giving away a copy of Gloomhaven, which is like this huge hot topic game that everyone's like wanting right now. Right?
Yeah. Apparently it's going on eBay for like $400.
You're giving it away. You are very generous.
I have two copies.
I know. I'm just saying. It's amazing.
Well, I'm going to admit right now, this is an unadulterated attempt to drive people to the podcast to download more stuff. So we're going to run this contest a little bit differently. First, no extra entries for shares and likes and all that stuff. Not because we don't love them. Please keep sharing and liking us. But because it's almost impossible for me to track all this stuff accurately. So
yeah.
iTunes review, though, if you've done one of those, you still get your 5 entries. That's perma entries for every contest. Just mention it in the email that you send to me. And obviously, if you're Patreon, you get those entries. If you want to fan me on BoardGameGeek at Steel22374, or you can search for my name, Chris Steele, or fan our podcast page, I will throw in a couple entries for that, too, just because I'm trying to build up a little bit of rep on BoardGameGeek. But primarily, the way to enter is to email us. This contest is only going to run for 3 weeks. Each week, I am going to give you something to email us so you can get up to 3 entries by emailing us each week. For this week, what I want you to do is email me. In the title is going to say Gloomhaven Contest in the subject. You're going to email tabletopgametalk@gmail.com. And inside of that, just mention that you checked out the unboxing and let us know what you think about the unboxing. What you liked, what you didn't like, what we could do better. You don't have to watch all 47 minutes of it.
We took a long time.
Yeah, it's a big box.
Introducing the game as well, right?
Yes.
If you're watching on YouTube, look at this box.
Huge box. Oh, that's right. This is our third episode that's going on YouTube as well. This episode I'm going to split into 2 pieces. So there'll be the off topic is one and the on topic is another, but they'll both get published at the same time. So email us tabletopgametalk@gmail.com. In the subject, Gloomhaven Contest. Tell us what you think about our unboxing video. And if you didn't watch the unboxing video, you can say, I don't have a chance to watch the unboxing video. I boycott YouTube. Whatever the reason, just mention it in some way so I know that you've heard this. I will say something different next week. So you'll be able to enter again then and the following week, and you'll be able to enter again then. March 12th is the cutoff for this. You can save all your emails till the end, but honestly, it's easier for us if you don't. So try sending them in real time. I think that's good for that. Oh, international listeners, you are more than welcome to enter this contest. However, this box weighs over 20 pounds. So if you win and you're international, you will need to cover shipping. So I'll get a hold of you. We'll figure out how to do that. Just know if you're in the continental 48 states, I'll cover shipping. Alaska, Hawaii, or any place else in the world, I'll get a hold of you and we'll figure out how to cover shipping. If for some reason you win and you can't cover shipping, then there will be a runner-up and someone else will be lucky enough to get that. So just want to put that out there. We talked about releasing things. So YouTube, we are doing a huge push on YouTube. We're going to do unboxings. We're going to do how to plays on some things. I'm still working out how to do actual plays. If you're watching this on YouTube right now, I still haven't figured out the audio. I thought I had it. It turns out I didn't. So,
three and a half chords later.
Yeah. It took us like 25 minutes just to say, okay, fine. We'll just use the normal recorded audio. So I'm working on it. If you know a good YouTube camera to use, send it my way and I'll take a look at those. Yeah. So look for a lot of YouTube stuff because now we're doing it. We're addicted. So. That's fun. And we can do it with just two people. Usually, mm-hmm. You probably won't see all three of us in a YouTube video except for the actual mm-hmm. recordings, just because it's a lot to get into the scene. So, finally, weight loss update. This week, I wasn't really sure. I think I said that last week, too. There was another convention I went to this week. Mm. It was just in the North Suburbs, so it wasn't too far away. Capricorn, if anyone's curious, it's a sci-fi convention. The 194.9, down 1.5 pounds. So overall, from January 1st, I'm down 20.1 pounds.
That's epic.
Hit the 20-pound mark.
Yeah.
It's yep. exciting stuff.
5 more pounds and I'll start to exercise. Like, besides the walking.
Well, hang on. I swear you're doing quite a bit of exercise. Yeah.
No, I'm walking about 3 to 5 miles a day.
Right.
So at 190, I'm going to start doing like 7-minute workouts and like maybe 2 or 3 of them in a row to,
okay.
You know, so we'll see. That's my motivation. Nice. Josh? This looks good to you.
I'm 176.4, which means I'm down 3.6 from last week and 6.9 pounds overall, which is pretty good. I had a blip last week where I went up and I was really worried about it. So I don't know. I don't know if I drank a ton of water or I don't know what, but we're back on track.
You're back on track. Thing. Good, good. All right, let's just jump right into some feedback and reviews. So, indeed. Josh.
Yeah, Samir Biswas says, a suggestion for additional shows. Maybe go back to the format you used at the very beginning. So that was, we had a particular game that we focused on. And he says, I can see how it alienates players not interested in one specific game, but I definitely enjoyed the conversation you had on strategies and experiences with Scythe in episode 1. What if you recorded extended side podcasts about games you were really excited about? That way, you could even record ones about Pandemic Legacy without having to worry about spoilers during the weekly show. I personally don't get a kick out of watching playthroughs, but do like hearing the breakdowns of games after a session is done.
Yep. So, Samir, thanks for the suggestion. So, first of all, you hit it on the head for Pandemic Legacy. We are going to do a show on that, but we're not going to do it as part of the normal weekly show. That way you can listen to all of the Pandemic Legacy spoiler episode without having to not listen to our normal weekly show.
We wouldn't want you to have to go a whole week without us.
No, that would be terrible. So we are starting, as I think some people have noticed, doing midweek shows. They'll be irregular at first, but I'm trying to get on a more regular cadence. And I think it's a great idea to do in-depth looks at individual games, kind of like episodes 1, 2, and 3, but outside of our normal format. So you won't hear the off-topic section. It won't be an on-topic section. It'll just be jumping right into the game. We will do that. If you guys have a particular game that you want us to drill into, send it our way. We'll certainly take a look at it.
All right, we have more feedback here from Magnus. I started listening to your podcast a couple weeks ago with episode 4 because I liked the more general topic. Now that I'm almost caught up, I've decided to contact you to tell me tell you how much I enjoy your work. I've been listening to podcasts for a couple of years, but mainly sports-related ones. However, I decided to search for some tabletop podcasts after I started playing more again in the last few years. Yours was the second I listened to and the only one that made it onto my regular rotation. I enjoy your chemistry and the more general focus with the addition of some insight into single games. I have to say I'm a little bit bummed that I missed two giveaways, but we'll join the next one. Welcome to this episode with a giveaway. Yep.
So certainly email us, Magnus, and you will be in the running. Now, you are international, so just be prepared to pay shipping on whatever 22 and a half pounds are. And this is kind of funny because this is the exact opposite of what Samir just suggested, which is what we basically do. We want to please everyone. Yeah. So we will please you both.
We can do that. Yeah. We can do that. And Magnus does continue, actually, with episode 22 feedback. If some of you are interested in a Magic similar game without the collectible card game aspect, I recommend Ashes Rise of the Phoenix Born. I was interested in playing Magic, but was always discouraged by the collectible card game aspect. He says, I did spend way too much money on a Star Trek collectible card game in my youth. Ashes plays very similar and has similar mechanics to Magic, but it's more casual and you buy it one time to get all of the cards, initially sorted into six decks. The main difference to Magic is that you do not use lands or similar cards, but you have a separated deck, in air quotes, of dice. This on the one side streamlines your actual deck while keeping some of the luck in play.
Yeah, and it's a gorgeous game. So I have been looking at this game for quite a while. I honestly don't know why I haven't bought it yet. There are expansions, so you can add to the decks and such. I like the idea where you're rolling the dice to get the mana you need to cast spells. So now that it's been mentioned, I'm probably going to end up putting that on the list of games new that I own. I do want to do a shout out to Clay Howard, one of our first contests. He posted a picture on Twitter with our pandemic, with our autographs. I could see our names on there.
Oh, nice. So I'll have to check that one out.
That's awesome.
Awesome. Thanks.
Mish sent us a thank you for interviewing Serlin. He says that our interview was very good, that we got him to talk about things that we haven't had, he hadn't talked about in the past. So I'm still working on interviewing skills, but I'm setting up as many as I can for practice.
Wait, are we not allowed to mention what it was that he didn't mention in the past?
Apparently, Serlin has never mentioned the future plans or expansions for Codex, and he talked a little bit about what his plans were there.
Just a bit.
Yep. Yeah. So if you're interested in Codex, you like Codex, listen to our last episode, and you'll hear all kinds of...
Because we got the scoop.
We got the scoop.
All right, now for a quick question from Nate this week. Non-party game recommendations that scale 2 to 6-ish well. I often play in a group of 2 to 4, but occasionally it grows to 6. We always avoid splitting into 2 groups since we all want to play together. So I would like to find games that scale well in that range.
Yeah, so this is a tricky one because once you hit 6 players, you specifically almost always fall back to party games. And as much as Cards Against Humanity is, you know, one of my most favorite games of all times, slash and sarcasm, there are better games to play with 6 players. A few, Cosmic Encounters, it's not one of Kitty's favorites, but if you have a group that likes to discuss and be social and stuff, Cosmic Encounters is a great 6-player game. Lots of alliances and such.
Oh, yeah, it's that one.
Yes.
With, like, the stack of characters, like, 8 inches wide.
Yeah, well, I have...
High.
I have 7 expansions for it, so it adds some more.
And it's a bit diplomacy-esque, where you're constantly making alliances and stabbing each other in the back. Yeah. And,
well, you don't necessarily have to stab each other in the back. Right. But that's the fun of it.
Yeah. And but the game not, kind of forces you that way. Yeah.
It's not Munchkin-esque, though. You're not actively stabbing people in the back. It's just this... turn, it makes sense for me to ally with you. Next turn, it doesn't. So no, I'm not going to. I'm going to be defending whatever it's you're trying to do. I really, and this, I'm in the minority maybe on this, but depending on how casual your group is, Catan with the 5 and 6 player expansion, I think I've mentioned this before, I like Catan at 5 and 6 players better than less than that, because you get an action between everybody's turn, which keeps you engaged, so you can spend your resources between everyone's turn.
You don't have the sit and wait that you normally do.
Yep.
In not just Catan, but in a lot of games.
Yeah.
Especially with 6 players, sometimes you can take your turn, stand up, go get a drink, get a snack, sit down, and there's still more two more turns before it's your turn again.
So you want to keep people engaged. But I know if you're playing with a bigger group, maybe, and it's a steady gaming group, maybe Catan's not your style. But you did some research on...
I did some research into Carcassonne playing with 6 players. And which expansions work best for that. And there is a battle raging over whether Carcassonne is even worth playing if you're not playing two player. And then I read a couple that are like, we only like it if you're just building the map. I don't like the expansions that add too much player interaction. And then I read another one that said the only way to play with six players is to play the Princess and the Dragon because there's so much more player interaction. And it's just quite the battle out there.
So it's interesting because you must have played it with more than two players. Like, what did you think beyond two players, whether it was worth playing or not?
I think with two players, you get a much deeper strategy going on. You can much more easily keep track of how many points each player has kind of in your head.
More tactical.
More tactical. Almost, you know, Chris's favorite chess, like, although there is still the luck of drawing what you need out of the bag, out of the pile. I like it both ways, though. Okay. I think it's more fun with more people. I'm throwing a lot of ums out here.
Yeah,
sorry, guys.
Well, it's a bit more social.
Yeah, I would say as long as the game keeps going, it's not that bad with three, four, five, six people. Okay. Because as long as people aren't taking forever and agonizing over where to put the tile.
Yes.
Because nobody can go until you've placed that tile. Mm-hmm. So if everyone's taking 2 or 3 minutes and you're playing a six-player game, it's 10 minutes between drawing a one-inch, well, 1.5-inch by 1.5-inch tile. It can get excruciating. Mm-hmm. But if people are moving along fast, I think it's not that bad.
I think that the Princess and the Dragon would definitely play fun with six people. Yeah. I think that would be a good expansion to add because it does matter when it's not your turn. Something might happen that would affect you.
Right, because that dragon, everyone has to be involved with the dragon moving. So another one I really like with six, well, it's best with five, but six, it works fine. Battlestar Galactica, that's like a heavier game where if your group really wants to get into that. You could also go Dark Moon if you wanted to get away from all the tiny little cars and roll dice. They're very similar games.
Both kind of longer plays.
They both play longer, but when you have that larger group, you kind of expect it. If you really want to go long, Twilight Imperium is played best at six players and 8+ hours. But it's designed, it's designed to be a six-player game. So that's a good one, too. And you can also go one versus many. So the Others, for example, has one person who's playing the bad guy, and it has, I believe you can play up to five people, up to six, actually, playing the rest of the team. Descent has a kind of the same thing where it's a one versus a group of people. So if you have bigger groups, take a look at the one versus many games because you're kind of playing one person's that... it's me against everyone else. And then the person who's the better, I don't want to say better, but the person who's more into the games can take that role and guide everyone else through. So you can kind of bring in casual players into that as well.
That must be a good one for you. You must enjoy that one, I imagine.
I like one versus minis. I do that a lot. It's fun. It's easy to teach it from that side.
Right.
You know, it's like, okay, I've set up the game. Now it's your turn. These are the things you can do. Now I can do this. Now it's your turn. These are the things I can do. You can do.
You're also the person that really enjoys being the DM, though.
Yes.
I think it's a definite player type.
Yeah.
The one who enjoys that position. Because I don't.
Yeah.
No. I do not like that.
Yeah. I wouldn't put a new player into it. I wouldn't put a timid player into that position. But if you are the gamer and your group is kind of centered around you, these are kind of good games to bring out because they're still very heavy gaming. And if you're the one, you're going to get the heavier part of it. So you kind of get your kicks off of it while everyone else is kind of working together. So they kind of get a different feel.
Sense. Yeah.
So
could be a good gateway for a group to bump up to a level that you haven't hit before, maybe.
Yep. All right. So new games. I only got one new game and I guess disclaimer. This was an actual prototype sent to me for free.
Nice.
So most everything on the actually everything up until now that we've talked about on the show has all been something I paid for. So I've never put any disclaimer. I'm talking about games as if I'm buying. If you want to send me a game for free, though, I will happily play it and let you know what I think and let everyone know that they're promotional copies for review consideration or whatever that term is. The Mageling prototype. We talked about this a couple weeks ago. This was a game by Joseph. I know his last name, but it's slipping my mind right now. But anyway, Joseph is really cool. I've been actually talking to him over the past couple days about this particular game. And Joseph Butler. And he sent me this game. I played it today because there's a solo variant to it. And I wanted to kind of, for our solo episode, play the solo game and kind of get a feel for it. This game is really cool. When I read it, read the rules and kind of watched some videos on it, I'm like, okay, this looks pretty interesting. Actually playing it, setup is a breeze, play is a snap, it's fun, there's interesting decisions. I will get into why of all these things when we're on topic, but I really, really was impressed with it. Nice. They are now taking pre-orders, so you can go to their website. You can check Mageling on Kickstarter. You can go to their website, and they will. You can get pre-orders there. I will post the link to the website in our show notes, but it is also at a familiargames.net. So if you're looking to get it, and it's not expensive. I think it's like $29 or something along those lines. So it's a quick, easy, casual game. Plays 1 to 4. You can play it full co-op or you can play it competitive. So worth taking a look at. The other game, well, not game I have, but something I kickstarted, Champions of Midgard, the expansions. So Champions of Midgard is a Viking worker placement game with dice for Vikings and warriors, and you go and you fight monsters and you sail on ships, and it's really, really cool looking, and it's a really, really fun game. The Kickstarter is, I believe they're doing 2 expansions, possibly 3 with stretch goals, so they're just doing it all in 1 Kickstarter. It's already funded. If you haven't played Champions of Midgard, you should. If you have, then go check out the expansions. So we're looking for a good game to do a playthrough. This might be a good one for that because there's a lot going on and it's really cool to look at. So game of today. We really didn't. Oh, wait. No, we did.
We did play a game today. It's sitting right in front
of
us. You're
just having amnesia again.
All right. Today we played Imhotep, Builder of Egypt. I loved this game. I thought it was really fun.
Yeah, yeah, totally. I mean, I really like the geographical aspects because you're sailing these blocks towards different sections of the board, and you really got to think about where the blocks are going to end up because they go into each section in a certain way. Just something I haven't seen from a game before.
So that mechanic. It's essentially a light point salad game. Mm-hmm. On your turn, you really only have 4 different things you can possibly do.
There are 4 choices. Yes.
You have a lot of. They're very large blocks, like wooden blocks in the game, and you are trying to build pyramids or tombs or
obelisks,
and
you can also pick up cards,
and there's a market, and there's ships, and it just plays really fast, really easy. There's a lot of strategic decisions to make in it, but you could teach it to anyone in a matter of 5 minutes.
We opened the box, took the saran wrap off, read the rules, and we're playing within 10 minutes.
10 minutes. And finished. Easy. And finished everything in under an hour.
Yeah. Yes.
From opening to learning to playing.
And considering I'm a massive analysis paralysis player, I was fine. I just did it.
There aren't that many decisions to make. I think playing with 3 players felt really good for the interaction that we had.
Yeah.
The time it took between turns, you still had enough time to kind of think about what you were going to do next. Yeah. But you didn't feel like this is taking forever.
Yeah. Like I only heard good things about it, which is why I picked it up. But a lot of times I'll pick these things up and I just won't pay much attention to them. Oh, yeah, it's a good game. I'll get to it eventually. I'll actually pull this one out probably fairly often. Like when we want to play a casual quick game, this will be one of the go-tos.
I would add this to my gateway games list.
Yeah, this is a great gateway game. This is something that, you know, if it doesn't really matter. It's really easy to learn.
And younger kids could do really well. It recommends 10 and up on the box, but I would say possibly
you could go 7 or 8 if they're
likes to play games.
Yeah, if they can focus for a half hour, 40 minutes. So the box says 40 minutes for a game, and I think it's pretty spot on.
Mm-hmm.
So, all right, let's move on to our topic.
In this episode, we're going solo, sort of, and talking about games that you can play in solo mode. Sometimes this is the same game. Sometimes the rules change, and some games weren't originally designed for solo play, but fans have created solo rules. Thanks, Samir, for pointing this out. So let's talk solo games.
Yeah. So we did couples games. now it's time for solo games.
Right.
I, for one, whenever I see a 1-2-something on the box, I've mentioned this before, I'm far more likely to buy it, but I almost never play the solo version of it.
Huh.
I just like, I like the idea that at some point I could sit down and play the solo version if I wanted to, but I don't often do that until now. So I'm like, all right, I'm going to force myself to play some of these games.
Well, it's good one of us did.
Because full disclosure. Disclosure, me and Josh did not.
I gave you homework.
I did read the solo variant of a couple different rule books. I just never quite made it to the actual gameplay.
So, but this is a good kind of thing to think about. So, you both like playing games.
Yeah.
Your significant others sometimes will play games, not everything, sometimes won't. Have you ever considered playing a game solo? Like sitting down, opening a box, setting up the game and running through it as a solo game?
I played Pandemic solo. It wasn't the actual board game version. It was the iPhone.
Not counting apps. Apps don't count.
Oh, okay.
I was going to say, well, then, not counting apps? No, yeah. It has never occurred to me.
Yeah.
And why is that?
Because of maybe the setup and
fiddly bits.
Yep.
There are other things I would rather do by myself than set up a game to play by myself.
And I think that's it. It's that, you know, I play games a lot of the time for the social aspect. You know, I want to be playing with people so we can hang out and do this cool thing together, play this cool game together. So the idea of me just sitting in a room doing it alone, the only time I can think about maybe doing that, because I loved a game so much that I wanted to get better at the strategy. So maybe Scythe, I was like really into Scythe and I wanted to get better. And, you know, it's hard to get many people together for such an in-depth, difficult strategy game. And so, yeah, that would be a great way to
actually just reminded me, for 6 players, Scythe is a really good one too. You need the expansion, but it does play up to 6 players.
Great game.
So, it also plays all the way down to 1 player, which is a great segue. Let's talk about Scythe for a second, the 1-player version of Scythe, because this gives you a very interesting kind of solo play. First of all, the game was not designed to be solo. It was designed to be a typical 2-to-X game.
Oh, I didn't know that.
So another group came in and said, okay, we're going to do the solo rules for this. And the solo rules are a pack of cards that run you through an AI, essentially. And the AI plays another character. So it's basically a 2-player game when you're playing solo. But the second player plays through these AI cards. Now, the way that that works is the AI cheats. It doesn't need to follow certain rules. Its movement rules don't follow the same rules as you do. All of the things it does are kind of dependent on what the card comes up as, but it's not following the same things. It eventually will go to different areas. It'll have resources. It never pays for anything either. So just depending on how these cards work. So it's like those really old school AIs where the only way the AI was competitive was just to cheat. In Scythe, it's kind of the same way, but it simplifies what you have to do. You have to learn the AI as a completely separate game, though.
Oh.
So, because it has its own set of rules. It has its own set of everything on how to learn the AI there. It's interesting. It's cool. You can definitely play against it. It's just a lot of work to control the AI player along with your player as well.
Okay. So you don't think you'd learn anything about the game versus real people?
You would, because you would, because when you're playing your character, there are no rule changes.
Okay.
It's just about how the rest of the board is changing. Okay.
You could, in my hypothetical scenario, use it as in to get better and to try different strategies out.
Absolutely.
Against the AI.
Yep.
Right.
Yep. Because like I said, he's the AI, which we'll refer to as a he, is doing things. But you are able to optimize your engine, see how your faction works, do all those things as the AI is doing that. And you're still scoring. You're still trying to beat the AI. And the AI just has different ways of getting those points. What are you thinking, Kitty?
If I'm going to do that, I'm going to buy the app.
Yeah.
Is there an app for Scythe?
No.
I don't know if there's an app for Scythe, but this is what I did with Pandemic.
Yep.
And this is how I play Carcassonne.
Yep.
Oh, well, I agree with you. If there is an app, I would choose that because no fiddly bits.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, and that's the thing. That's why I'm saying apps are off the table.
Yeah.
Because I completely agree. If I'm going to play solo, it's going to be on an app and I'm going to play it through and let the AI do the work.
The solo game that everyone thinks of as, it's solitaire. It is solitaire. Everyone plays on their computer.
Yep.
When is the last time you saw someone get a real deck of cards out right. and actually play solitaire?
Because it's still much much more efficient because you don't have to do anything. You press a button and it all just it does the setup for you.
Nobody like bumps the table and knocks over something. Nobody has their cat jump up and knock over the cards when you're playing on the app.
I will say, when I was a kid, I played solitaire all the time. I'm relatively old, and that was before everyone had a computer everywhere.
Yeah.
And my mother would still play solitaire on the kitchen table. And I was thinking, what makes solitaire something that people, like, even if you've never played it in person, you probably still have a pretty good idea how it plays. What makes that game playable as a solo game that people keep coming back to it? Because even if you did play it on the computer, it's exactly the same as it you is. Play yeah. in person. What about that game? And I have my opinions, but I'm wondering, like, you both have played solitaire to some extent.
Yeah, no, I played it. I played it on my, Microsoft.
I play it a lot. And what I like about it, it's different every time. There are unwinnable solutions. There's just some ways that the cards fall out that you cannot win every time. It maintains that difficulty, but you win enough that it's still fun.
Mm-hmm. Right.
It has those hidden cards. You don't know what it's going to be until you start to play.
Yep.
Yeah. Those are, I think, my big things and why I like
and
it.
And it's simple. I think for me, you know, when I was playing it, you know, years and years ago, it was easy to pick up. It was easy to understand. You know,
the setup is also
like
a snap. And I think that's the big thing between solo board games and a deck of cards and playing solitaire. Solitaire setup is, you know, place your cards in column 1, 2, 3, 4, your face down cards, and start going. And that's it. That's you're ready. You're playing the game. With a lot of solo board games, you have to get everything out of the box. You need to set it up. You need to put all the pieces together. So then I started thinking, well, what games kind of mimic that solitaire feel?
Right.
And that's when I started looking around at games where, yes, you have the 1 to X games. What about the games that were designed to be 1 or 2 player games? You know, from out of the box, like literally out of the box. And there are games like that now. I talked about Mageling, and I'm going to talk about it now. Again, this game is not out yet. You can order it. You can pre-order it right now. The solitaire version of this game is so good. And the reason for that is it's hard. So you're not going to win every time. Mm-hmm. And so the way this game plays is you have to take your character through 5 different locations. And you're trying to get to the last location so you can save your home tree. That's not the name of it, but it's something tree. And the way what you do is you put a timer on a card. This tree is going to die in 5 rounds. And every time you start your turn, you remove a counter. So if it takes you more than 5 rounds, you're dead. Well, obviously, that's not enough to defeat everything, right? So what you do is at the top of every location, you get more counters. So every time you move forward in a location, you put those on the tree, which buys you a little bit more time. So as long as you're moving forward, you keep getting more time, but less and less time as you move on. So you're going to get close to winning, and you may win from time to time, or you may just lose by, oh man, if I only had 3 more energy, I would have won. So you're like, I want to do it again. The setup, simple. Put your 5 piles out, 1 stack of shuffled cards, and put those out as 5, and then you just start playing. So, and the other part is dice. You're rolling the dice, and then you're making decisions. That's kind of a key to me in solitaire games. You guys are both looking at me like, this game sounds interesting, but I have no idea what you're talking about. Fair enough.
It sounds like it hits a lot of my fun solitaire boxes of not always winnable, but winnable enough, and, you know, random secret stuff.
Yep.
But
easy setup, fairly simple to understand.
Yep, there's a lot of face down cards.
How would you rate it on the kind of to pick up this game?
I would say to pick it up, again, I was reading beta versions of the rules, but even the beta versions are pretty darn straightforward. Okay. There's some cleanup that's going to be done and some editing that'll be done to it. So I think you could pick this game up in probably 3 or 4 pages of rules. Although the book is probably going to be 12 to 16 pages. It has a lot of pictures and highlights how things go. Once you've played through a single turn, though, you're like, oh, I get this.
Nice.
No bigger deal. No bigger deal.
I wasn't going to call
you bigly deal.
No bigly deal. It does point out one thing, though. There's two kinds of solitaire games. Well, there's lots of types of solitaire games, but there's two chief mechanics. I think every solitaire game has some randomness to it. Like, you just have to. There's no way really around that. There's a triangle inside of all the cracker barrels. That's a pyramid thing where you have pegs in it, and there's the center peg is left empty, and then you jump the pegs, and you're trying to clear as many pegs as you want.
Okay.
That game has
golf tees.
Yes, the golf tees. That game has no randomness in it whatsoever. Like, you could master that game. If I do X, you know, this sequence of moves,
solution, right?
I win. But there's so many sequences that you can't really remember it. I've never beat the game personally.
My mom does it every time.
Yeah, because she knows the moves. But most games have a random element to it. You're shuffling a deck of cards, you're rolling dice, you're doing whatever. I like solitaire games where the randomness is up front, and when I make a move, the resolution of that move is determined. Because as opposed to making a choice and then getting a random result from that choice.
Oh, okay.
In Mageling, I roll 5 dice, and then I can re-roll X number of those, whatever I want. I get 1 re-roll. With whatever those dice are, yes, it's like Yahtzee.
Chris hates it when people say games are like Yahtzee.
This is like Yahtzee.
Oh, okay, this one is.
As long as it's like Yahtzee, you're allowed to say it's like Yahtzee. Okay, but if it's role player, you're not allowed to say
Just because you roll dice doesn't make it like Yahtzee.
It's the roll in placement of the dice.
Whatever. Anyway.
We won't rehash that argument.
This is an in-joke that the listeners have no idea about.
No, well, if you've been listening for a while, you definitely
probably
know.
Would, yeah.
Although role player does have a one-player variant.
Oh. Well, we can bring that up in a minute.
So it's another one where you're trying to optimize your score.
I see why that is. That makes sense to me.
Yep. But it brings up another kind of... I'm going to be doing a lot of talking. I apologize right now. You can blame... All right.
We didn't do enough homework. This is why.
I do have something to talk about.
All right.
Okay. Solo games where you play multiple characters.
Yes.
A lot of cooperative games that you can play as a solo variant are... you are playing kind of for each character.
Right.
Mostly you're playing two of the characters. Sometimes, like Pandemic, you can just go ahead and play all four characters.
Yeah. In fact, the Pandemic app just assumes that you're playing solo with all four characters.
So, it's true.
Yeah, you could do that.
And I do like that, but those are the games that I think are really too much work to set up. And those are the ones that I like the app for.
Yeah. Well, Pandemic is a tricky one, too. I mean, I would never... If I was sitting down, I might play Pandemic solo, but I'd probably play the two-character version of it.
Right.
Two characters I can bounce back and forth for. Even when I was playing in real life, the Pathfinder collectible card game, which is also one you can play a single player, I would never go more than two players if I was going to play multiple players. I would suggest you play that one with one player, though. We're going to throw out a lot of games you can play with one player or play solo with two. So those are some good ones.
Arkham Horror,
the card game. Yep.
With two, I think you play solo, but it is recommended you play two characters.
Yeah. But you can play one character with it. It's just harder because you don't have as many options is what's going on.
That's true.
So back to the resolution, though, of like the mechanics. So if I can choose beforehand and then I know doing something is going to have it work, I think that's far better than... I'm going to say I'm going to do something, and now I'm going to roll dice and see if I succeeded or not.
Right.
Pathfinder does this. I flip up a card and I have to fight this monster. All right, I'm going to add this ability, that ability. I have a dice pool. I have 2d10s and a d6. I need to get a 12 or better. I roll the dice. Every time I get less than a 12 in person, I'm just like, well, I guess I could fudge this because I really just don't want to lose. And you have to force yourself every single time to say, nope, that great decision I made where I used all of my resources to have this huge amount of dice, I just rolled poorly and that screwed me.
Yeah, that's frustrating.
Yeah. I would much rather say I draw 5 cards and of these 5 cards, what can I do? And then whatever I do, it happens. But that gives me that feeling of that there's a puzzle there.
That's exactly what I was going to say. I love the ones where it feels like playing is solving a puzzle, that there is... maybe not a path to win, but there's always like the optimal path to get through it, and that I can take my time with each step, and my decision is what drives the game forward.
Yep. There's a new game out, One Deck Dungeon. So good. This is another one of those things where you can just set up, you shuffle the cards, you pick your characters, and you just start playing.
That was fun, yeah.
And it's, you can play at one player or two player. If you have two boxes, you can actually play it up to four players, I believe. But honestly, this game is best by just opening it up and playing in front of you. It's fantasy solitaire, including ways of leveling up your character, getting equipment, getting new abilities, getting deeper into the dungeon, all of this in a single deck of cards. Now, this has the rolling mechanic where you make your choice and then you roll your dice and attempt to, you know, beat the monsters. But it has a lot of post-rolling options you can make. So it's like, I just missed by two, but I have this ability that allows me to use a red die as a blue die, so therefore I can succeed. So you still have that kind of best of both worlds feelings to it.
Because sometimes it is nice for it to not be your fault when you lose.
Yeah.
Because I know, like, when I'm playing solitaire, and I know that usually I know when I can't win. I know, oh, that ace is under that two and I can't win. There's no way to get from here to there, whatever the case is. But sometimes I'm looking at it like, I don't even know why I can't win.
Yep.
And it's just so frustrating.
I can imagine.
It's nice to be able to say, it is the dice. It's the dice's fault. It wasn't me. It True. Was all on luck.
But I can see that with solitaire, because the cards can come out in certain ways that kind of block you. And you're like, well, the cards came out like that. But I think with the dice thing, it's more frustrating, because if you had planned out, like Chris was saying, if you planned out that perfect move and it's like, now I just need to roll a 10 and you don't roll the 10, you're like, this stupid game.
Yep. Especially when the average of the dice would have been an 18 and you still roll less than a 10.
Yeah.
You know, because you're doing that math in your head. You're always like, all right, I need a 10. If I do this, the average is going to be an 11. So it's like a little better than 50-50.
Yeah.
You know, and the more you get higher than that, it's like, okay, this is definitely going to make it. And you see 1-1-1-2.
Yeah, I played the averages and I'm still getting,
Yep. That's frustrating.
Yeah.
And
that's the kind of thing I hate in multiple player games too, though, is right. when it's just like you have an unlucky turn.
Yep. And I feel like, all right.
So, either way, you feel like you can't come back from that turn. You're like, no!
I feel like, all right, if you were new to this episode because you heard that we had a Gloomhaven contest and you're like, I'm going to listen to this, so I'm going to keep listening to these guys. We're not normally this negative. Promise. In fact, I'm going to change this over to Gloomhaven for a minute. Because Gloomhaven also plays 1-4 players. And this is a game where the one-player game is play two characters. Mm-hmm. So that's a requirement. However, I have played this with one player. And Kitty and I have played this with two players. And the feeling of the game is pretty similar. Now, it's more fun when you're playing with someone next to you and they're able to concentrate on their cards and you're able to concentrate on yours. But in this game, the randomness is from a deck of cards. You're not rolling dice, and it's so plus or minus one usually, sometimes plus two, minus two. All of what you're thinking is the tactical stuff on the board. The monsters are driven by a very simple AI for the most part. It's a common sense AI, I would like to say. The monsters want to hit the thing that's closest to them. Simple enough. So the one-player game in Gloomhaven is completely viable. And it's actually quite enjoyable. And for a game like Gloomhaven, where when you play the game, this is actually a great thing to do in a one-player game. When you play the game, what you do matters for everybody who could potentially play this game later. So you're not playing in a vacuum. You're not just playing this game to waste time.
Oh. It's true. The legacy mechanic of the game, the one player is affecting future plays of the game.
Right.
Because each play has a consequence in the next game.
Your characters are getting more experience. You may be unlocking new quests. You might be getting new items. So it actually means something to sit down and play this game solo a few times. Because then the next time your group of friends comes over, you're like, okay, yeah, I leveled up my characters. I played through this and I unlocked this. So now we're going to go over this scenario.
You'll never guess what sword I got. Yeah.
Exactly.
Right.
It is fun, though, because those also, you can still play a high level character with a low level character. Just because you level your character up 6 times playing solo, your friend can still come over and play their 2 level 2 character and not feel like, left out.
Nice.
The way that it works, you kind of like average the scores. There's a setup for...
Yeah. You add up all the levels, divide by two, round up, and that's the default to difficulty for the scenario. Also, level one and two characters have very viable cards that will help you. Even if you're level three or four, you still have some level one cards in your hand anyway.
And they have some very powerful moves in there, too.
Yep.
That it can be the winning strike of the game, I'm sure.
Yeah. So, or you're just a meat shield. But you don't even have to be. Like I said, there's a lot of, right from the beginning, your characters are really good.
Love that phrase, meat shield. Meat shield,
yeah. Go over there and take damage so that I can come back here and do really cool things.
Yeah.
So
we had a really hard time playing two players because we did not have a meat shield. We played two squishy characters. And
you were the meat shields, but there was no person
there was
you.
No one who should have been.
Yeah, apparently,
out in front.
Apparently Spellweaver Tinker is not a great two-player combination. Especially when you're not paying attention to the number of monsters that would show up in the second room and you accidentally double what you should have been fighting.
Oh, wow.
And you forget about the fact that you could lose a card from your hand or two from your discard pile to mitigate damage so that the Tinkerer doesn't die just after opening the door to said second room with too many monsters in it.
This is how you learn, Chris.
It is how we learn.
I killed all those monsters in that second room, though.
Yeah.
We just never made it to the third yeah. room then.
She killed all the monsters, and then I'm exhausted.
I had no more cards.
Yep. So the one player in Gloomhaven, I would set this game up, and I would play it. It's a puzzle-y thing every time. The story advances. What I do that time is meaningful.
I actually think it would be very hard to play on an app, too. I don't think that apps do well managing card hands is much for me, especially if you're switching back and forth between two hands, especially with the lost mechanic and the discard. You really have to be able to kind of see all those piles. I think that this would be a very good one-player playthrough, and I have not yet, but I might.
Yeah, and it's a great tactical game, too. You have the miniatures, you have all the little standees for all the monsters. It's just there's so much going on. It's kind of fun to feel all the pieces. So we're raving about Gloomhaven one player or two player, which is almost the same game. There are the only rules difference in the one player versus the two player is the two player, or actually multiplayer, 2 to 4. You're not supposed to speak about the actual values of cards you're going to play. You don't say I'm going on initiative 27. You say I'm going on an early initiative. You don't say I'm going to do 5 points of damage. You say I'm going to do a lot of damage. So you kind of keep that vagary in there. With a one-player game, obviously you know exactly what's going on. So the way the compromise is there is you increase the amount of damage that traps do by one, and you increase the level of the monsters by one without increasing anything else. So it makes the game harder, but you have an advantage because you know exactly what you're playing.
You have the meta game information.
Yep.
That you wouldn't normally have in a multiplayer.
Yep. And that is actually a way of playing what you classified as full co-op as well, where you don't have hidden information. So you can have a four-player game where everyone's just doesn't hide any information, but you would still ramp the difficulty up that one notch to make up for that difference.
We were comparing this a little bit to Pandemic, the way you have your hidden hand still, but you can tell everyone what's in it. It's just, it makes everyone think a little bit harder about what that is.
Yep.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, the idea is that you should be making your own decisions for your own character and not having an entire group look over everything and like just agonize over the most strategic move. Because A, that's not fun for a lot of people. It is fun for some people, but not a lot. If it's fun for you,
the alpha player.
Yeah. If it's fun for you, this is the perfect solo game because you get to do all of that, plan exactly the right move. If you're doing a group of players, you kind of want to get that heat of the combat in there. You know, just make that decision and make it go. Don't worry, Jess. Even you would be okay with this.
Oh, okay.
Like, you haven't played it yet.
I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, we should set up a time this week.
Yeah.
To actually start the campaign. Kitty and I now know how to play the game, so we need to finish Pandemic Legacy.
Oh,
yes. So, Pandemic Legacy, we have 3 more months left? 3 more months.
Two.
November.
Three?
October, November, December.
Yeah. Okay.
But we could win in 3 games. We've been on a streak. So as soon as we're done with Pandemic Legacy, we're starting a Gloomhaven
campaign. I'm excited for Gloomhaven.
Every time we're on a streak, though, it usually means we're about to lose.
Yeah, that's right. So 4 more games of Pandemic. All right, back to other one-player games. I just got Rogue the card game. That has not, I have not seen that play yet. We played a quick two-player kind of playthrough. And if you're watching YouTube, you see that Kitty's running away and looking at things. See, this is the thing with recording. You can never really know.
Yeah.
So that's Rogue the card game. There's others. So we've talked about Arkham Horror the card game. There's tons and tons of one plus games. We were just looking, Pyramid Arcade actually has a couple one player games in there. Lewis and Clark has a one to mini, which I have actually not played the mini yet. I've owned this game for like 2 years. I haven't opened it yet. I should.
I had two games in my pile to take upstairs last week that I forgot to grab. And that was one of them, Lewis and Clark. And the other one was Scavengers. Scavengers.
Yep.
I just looked at it twice, if you watched the video, and still managed to forget the name between there and here. So, yeah, those were the two that I'm still very interested in taking upstairs and trying the solo version. I just was too lazy yesterday to walk the one floor down and get them.
Does Splenda have a one person?
It does not.
No.
However, this might be a good segue into games that don't have one player versions, but people do.
Oh.
So I want to mention this because Samir asked me to point this out. There are a number of games where people will make one-player rules for them. So the game wasn't meant to be one-player, but you could make an AI engine for it, and then you can play it one-player. James Humphrey from Board Game Geek did this for Seven Wonders Duel. Very simple. So Seven Wonders Duel is a two-player game, and he made a very simple AI. The AI cheats a little bit because it's the easiest way to make something that's actually competitive and without making super complicated even this one, someone made a flowchart, but it's not a complicated flowchart. but in this one, you basically play against the AI, and people have played it, and they're like, yeah, it's not bad. Sometimes you win, sometimes you lose, which is exactly what you're looking for. And the biggest thing that you want to make sure you're doing when you're creating AIs for games is making sure that the player who's playing is still playing the same game. You don't want them to change the rules. Maybe the setup, but not like the turn-to-turn rules. So I think James's Seven Wonders Duel variant was actually pretty well received. I got lost in reading the thread. Terraforming Mars has a solo variant. That one, you're trying to hit a certain threshold. I think you're trying to beat the game before X number of turns. And that is a very common thing to do, is you will have a timer. You must beat the game within X amount of time. Another one that's actually, for the most part, universally not all that adored is the high score solo variant, where you play to get a score, and then you play again to see if you can beat it. And there's just not a whole lot of fun in just trying to get the high score. I don't know, maybe, but...
Well, yeah, I could imagine it not being as satisfying because it's against some sort of AI, right?
Right. Well, because there's no win or loss.
Yeah.
You don't, like, when you're just trying to get a high score, you don't win. You don't lose. You just play, and here's my score.
Back to classic solitaire, or Klondike solitaire, if you are a big card player and are mad that we haven't called it that yet.
I didn't even know that.
Oh, yeah. There are... so many. I have a book of like 300 plus variants of one deck of card solitaire. My mom taught me to play clock solitaire to figure out if you had all of the cards in your deck. That's what she would make us do when we had, like, we were at my grandma's house and there were like eight different decks in a drawer. Yeah.
King.
And that was a fun one. But when you're playing Klondike, once you get to my mom level good, it can be scored. If you're playing on the computer, it does the scoring for you. So there are the just unwinnable scenarios. But when you are winning like 75% of the time, possibly more, it gets kind of boring. And then you do start beating your high score. But I do think it's important to have the losables in there because it keeps it. It's not just beating the high score.
You want to say you won. Fun fact, out of college, I don't know if it's fun, it is fun for me. The very first game that I ever wrote out of college was called Super Score Solitaire, which was based on your standard solitaire, put your rows out there, flip three cards. But it was all about the glitz and the bezazzle of getting points. And every time you did something, there'd be huge scores popping up all over the place. What
they like to call juicy feedback.
Juicy feedback everywhere.
Yeah, right.
So, and that, it was... actually a pretty entertaining thing to run because there's always something going on. Every time you did something, you got points for it.
There's Vegas-style Klondike Solitaire where you're winning and losing money based on how many times you go through your draw deck, how many cards you play on the aces, and that one's...
Well, there's also so many optional rules, and I'm just going to keep calling it Standard Solitaire, but I'm don't doubt Kitty and Klondiking it, although I love Klondike bars. Ugh. That's an aside.
Now we want ice cream.
I know. but like, you know, if you go through your entire deck, you can like, you switch one card and put it in the back on the bottom. So then you're like looking at different cards.
Cheats.
Yes, cheats. You have the flip one card at a time, which is a major cheat because you only lose there if you...
Well, Vegas style is flip one card, but you only have three goes through
right.
the deck.
Yep. So, and a lot of times, I mean, you can play a perfect game of solitaire. So it's, as long as you're not missing any of the placements, there are a few choices. Don't, if you play solitaire, and yes, I know that there are decisions and sometimes things that you wouldn't move over or you wouldn't play before whatever reason. But for the most part, you know when a play is a good play, and the mistakes you make are missing a play that you shouldn't have missed.
Are there any dexterity games that are one player? I'm trying to think.
You can actually, dexterity games are probably the easiest to make one player.
Yeah.
Imagine Jenga.
Yeah, right. And also, like, I feel like there was that game where it was kind of like a maze, but it's on like a tilting thing. And it's
Labyrinth.
A ball. Yeah, that's
yep.
it.
Yep.
Yeah.
So that is
a, really solo.
Yeah, that is a solo dexterity game.
That's kind of fun.
But like, I mean, yeah. Jenga, you could score that. I mean, I'm going to stack it up, and how many blocks can I pull out right. before it falls?
The how thing. Many levels can I yep. make it high before right. it falls?
Yep. Now, what I would do is put a win condition in there and say, I have to pull out 25 blocks without making it fall, and I win.
Nice.
So adding that element in there is there's a win-lose, as opposed to I was able to pull out 23 blocks. Well, okay, fine. What does that mean?
Right.
So give yourself that win-lose condition. Flick 'em up could easily be played as a solo game.
I haven't played that yet. People have told me about that. It sounds like an American game, I think.
It's basically wooden cowboys on horses, and you Ooh. Flick 'em around. Uh-oh.
Perfection.
What's perfection?
It's a timer, and it has the little pieces that go into the board. Yep. And when the timer is up, it pops the board up. And if you haven't gotten all the pieces in and hitting the stop button,
it just explodes.
It just explodes.
Pieces everywhere.
Oh yeah.
It does have a Lego-like quality where if you step on those tiny pieces, you will die.
Yeah, yeah. Permanent punctures in the feet.
Right.
But I loved that when I was a kid. Oh, nice. I would spend way too much time trying to beat my own time on it, because there's a win, but you can also see how fast you can do it.
And did you guys have Operation as well?
Yeah.
I would imagine you could play that one.
Yeah, you can play that solo.
Yeah.
Again, it would be, can I get everything out without losing, without touching the sides?
I cheated a lot playing solo Operation.
Yeah, if you take the battery out, it's really easy. Just saying. But I think the whole point of solo games for me is I really like games that you can win or lose. Mm. I don't like high score games. If I'm going to play a solo game, it's going to be something that's very, very easy to set up. Or, in the case of Gloomhaven, has a lasting something out of it. So it wasn't just a waste of an hour playing a game where nobody else was in the room. The tree fell and I can't prove it type of thing. Yeah, Joss and Kitty, I need to get you guys to play some solo games.
We apologize
to our listeners. Yeah. We didn't do our homework.
Yeah, you can email me at tabletopgametalk@gmail.com about how much Kitty and Josh are just kind of, you know, not pulling their weight.
Are we going to post Kitty and Josh shaming pictures where we hold up our sign? I didn't play a solo game this week.
Maybe that'll be our next, what I have you email for the next episode for the Gloomhaven entry is, tell me how Kitty and Josh could be better.
Or gamer shaming photos.
Oh, that could work.
I lost a piece. I don't know.
I almost lost a Pandemic Legacy piece.
You did.
I dropped like everything on the floor.
Yeah. And those you have to count because that matters.
It really does.
One piece can matter.
Yep.
So, any other final thoughts on?
I don't think so.
I don't think you should bash the high score thing. The only the time when I like high score is when I can judge it against everyone else's high score. So if I can do that,
apps and video games.
Yeah, I know, but I don't know if you had a bunch of friends that were doing it.
That's actually true.
Right.
If you had a bunch of friends that were doing it, competing, Jenga's a bad one because the scores are in a tight range. But if you had a bunch of friends that were all saying, okay, this is it, but you still have to prove it. That's the thing. It's like, oh, I played this game in my kitchen on last Thursday, and I pulled 90 of the 100 Jenga blocks out, and none of them fell.
Take a picture, and it's not that hard.
Honor system.
There's
Girl Scout promise.
There's no honor among competition.
Okay.
All right. Well, let us know your thoughts on solo games. Do you like them? Do you dislike them? Have you ever played them? If you have, what are some of your favorites? Let us know. And honestly, if you say Gloomhaven Contest and you let us know your thoughts on solo games, that'll count too for this episode only. You have until next week to put that, to send that in there. Otherwise, let us know what you think about the unboxing, and that one will be valid until March 12th. Still only one entry for this week. And Josh, why don't you take us out?
We need to work on our fast disclaimer voice.
I'm gonna put a little disclaimer thing on official contest rules. These are not official contests. I'm just giving away games.
He's making it up as he goes along.
Yeah. So I reserve the right to change anything. Just email me and you'll enter. I'm an honest person, I promise. So in the meantime, I think that this is probably a good time for
Indeed.
Josh to talk.
Well, thanks for listening. And remember, we love your feedback. So consider leaving us an iTunes review or email us with comments or questions at tabletopgametalk@gmail.com. You can also reach us on Facebook @tabletopgametalkpodcast or on Twitter @tabletopgametlk. You can also reach us directly @GameMasterChris, @Josh'sBlonde, and @KittenL. And if you like what you hear, help us spread the word by liking or sharing our posts. Finally, a huge thank you to our patrons, Emil Jiljam, Lucas Hartso, Trevor Olson, Rudy Liu, and Samir Biswas. If you'd like to support us via Patreon, you can find out more at tabletopgametalk.com/Patreon. All patrons are auto-entered into our contests with bonus entries, so check it out. Until next week, when we talk about playing to win, keep playing games and having fun.
Good night.